Hi, we're Team Casho, and you're listening to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to the new holders of the Australian 24-hour geocaching record. We get some milestones from GeoTalk listeners and a caching tip from Team Casho. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 54 of GeoTalk, and it's nearly Christmas time, so it's end of the year. It's just amazing. The weather is warming up. The days are much longer. It's great geocaching weather, particularly for those of us who are a little bit time deprived like myself, can finally start finding a few more on those weekend trips away. Speaking of trips away, Nay, Zach and I, the Spin Doctors, we recently went to Fiji and had a great time over there and managed to find a few, we found one geocache. We found a webcam geocache, which was set up by one of our local geocachers, Charlie Brown, here in Sydney. And it was at Castaway Island, fantastic island if you've got family. It's a great place to go to. Anyway, through my brother, we managed to get a few screenshots of us on the beach, and we got those posted. And we also held a WWFM because we just happened to be in Nandi, which is one of the cities in Fiji, at the same time that a worldwide flash mob was being held. So we thought we'd put it up there. I went out at 6 a.m., which was to coincide with the 10 a.m. over in San Diego, hoping that a few geocaches would turn up. In fact, on the dot, a minibus load of people turned up, and I thought maybe there are geocaches in Fiji, but it turned up it was just a group of people who were heading off to Suva, and they actually asked me if I wanted to come along for the ride. I would have loved to have checked out Suva, but I had a ferry to go get to Castaway Island. Anyway, so we found one webcam cache. We held an event, which only ourselves turned up to, and we got within 1 kilometre of another cache. Unfortunately, we just couldn't get to it, but we sailed past. Anyway, hopefully maybe in next time we get to Fiji, because we'd love to go back, there might be a few more caches. I think there was 15 in total in the whole country, and it very much, I suppose, depends on some of the locals getting into it, and the cost of GPSs over there is probably going to mean that it's going to take a long time before geocaching takes off in the Fiji Isles. One thing I did on the way back was I switched on the GPS once we were at a cruising altitude, just to have a look at the flight path and see where we were, because we were flying on an airline that doesn't have those maps, or doesn't have any screens for that matter, so you don't know where you are. And a really interesting thing I found was that the altitude was only registering about 2,500 meters, and it took me a while to work out why, and it was to do with the air pressure. Now, I've got a Garmin 60 CSX, and obviously it's using the air pressure of the cabin to work out what its altitude is, or to override the altitude that's getting from the GPS satellites, because I found that when I auto-calibrated, it sort of jumped back up to about 11,000 meters. So I'm wondering if anyone out there has tried tracing their path with their GPS, and whether they find their unit does the same thing. Still haven't worked out how to override that one yet. Now, the Geocaching Australia forums were buzzing over the last few weeks with the announcement of an interim policy on geocaching for Victorian national parks. Now, those who have been geocaching on the east coast of Australia will already know that geocaching is banned in New South Wales national parks. That's been since 2002. And earlier this year, the state of Queensland announced that it too was banning geocaching in national parks. Now, the draft policy in Victoria suggests that it will be restricted into only certain parks throughout the state. And I know that there's been at least one person caught at work who's been in touch with Parks Victoria, and actually Ian and Penny as well have also been in touch. And, there's been a bit of communication to and fro. And hopefully we'll see in the not-too-distant future a bit of dialogue between the geocaching community in Victoria and Parks Victoria to see what can get nutted out as far as geocaching in Australia or in Victorian national parks goes. In New South Wales, I was part of a meeting, a delegation that met up with some representatives there, and we took some people from the New South Wales Parks and Wildlife Service to check out a few geocaches, some in parks and some outside. And there was a lot of good discussion, a lot of questions and answers there. And they've told me just recently that there will be a review of the geocaching policy occurring in the first half of 2010. So fingers crossed, maybe some changes in the wind there. Most of you would have heard now a few weeks ago there was a death in the US of a geocacher who was out geocaching at the time. Very sad news, and the person involved apparently slipped on some wet pine needles and slid down an escarpment or a cliff and ended up obviously not surviving. Just highlights the need for us to be careful, particularly when we go out geocaching out in the bush. I know even just last Sunday I was out geocaching in the lower Blue Mountains and actually got to a fairly difficult cache, and Web Guy, you are a bad man. And when I got to the cache and I thought I knew where it was, just before I was about to stick my hand in to move a rock, I peered into the gap and I noticed the head of a snake staring straight at me, only about 2 or 3 feet away. Now, needless to say, I wasn't that distance for very long and I jumped back very quickly. But it just highlights that I was on my own. I had no mobile phone reception, and it was a hot day, so very hard to get back out of that area. So it shows that if you are going to go caching alone, to really be very careful about what you do, and even when you're going in groups, just to think about some of the hazards that you're going to face, whether it be water or heat or wildlife, or even your own fitness. Just take that into account when you go hunting for geocaches. And before we get into the feature for this particular episode and the trivia question, a quick plug for Zoe and Aaron at geocachestore.com.au. They're supporters of the podcast. And if you're thinking of getting a geocaching gift for your loved one or a friend for Christmas, probably now's the time this week to get your order in. Don't leave it too late because obviously you've got to take into account postage and so forth. So check them out at geocachestore.com.au if you want to grab a Christmas gift, or maybe you want to grab a new GPS for the summer holidays when you go out geocaching. Well, it's time now for the geocaching question for this particular episode. And I didn't mention Geocaching Australia has added trig points to their database. And now if you want to go out hunting for trig points, those tripod or quadrupod stands with the big metal discs on them and usually with a brass plaque underneath, or in some cases just a concrete plinth, you can now go to geocaching.com.au and do a search for trig points. And there's about... not going to mention how many there are because that's the question for this episode. How many trig points have been loaded into the Geocaching Australia website, including those that have recently been archived? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, after several years of holding the record, the Kiwis can now put their tails between their legs because the Aussies have got it back again. We hold the record for the most number of caches found in a 24-hour period, and I've got two of the record-setting team here with me today. It's the Rats and Steba. Welcome to Geo Talk, and congratulations on reaching that fantastic record.
Thank you very much, man.
All right, well, first I'll start with you, Dave, from the Rats. Tell us what prompted you to set the record.
I don't know what prompted us, but we've always sort of been after big numbers and stuff like that. Even on the day itself, I was never confident of a record or anything like that. So we didn't intentionally go for the record.
Okay. So, I mean, well, if you weren't going for the record, what were you hoping to achieve?
Oh, I had thought we'd probably get 180 in a day. Mm-hmm. And just as the day progressed, we were in the time constraints and finding the right amount and the right amount of hours and that type of stuff, and it just all fell into place.
Okay. Now, Steve, you were involved in this search. How much planning went into it?
Oh, obviously quite a bit of planning. For some months probably we had a bit of a little website going between us all, so everyone contributed as we went for different things. But I mean, one thing for me, I don't have necessarily all the software, but I know Dave particularly in Matt as well, had a lot of maps and so on drawn with different routes. And at one stage we might have been doing a north route and then a southern route. So, yeah, definitely quite a bit of planning, yeah, mainly on the route, but even other little things throughout the day as well that all helped.
Mm-hmm. This would have been quite a bit of effort to put together, because first of all, the two of you are from Wollongong. You're working with Farmer Frenson from Canberra and with Big Matt and Shell from Newcastle. And I should point out too, you hit Adelaide to get there. So how long ago did you start the planning? And then take us through what you did when you got to Adelaide.
Planning, I think our first entry, like we said, we had a little what's called a wiki. Much easier than email and stuff, because you're sort of on, you know, if something's posted, everyone sees it instantaneously type stuff. So I think the first entry on there was the 1st of April, and it progressed from there. And, you know, there was the planning for this and that, and even as simple as things as we didn't sign logs. We had a sticker already made, so we just put a sticker straight in the book, and there was things like that. And then arrived in Adelaide. We arrived a few days earlier. I'd already done 40 odd in the whole of South Australia. Stephen had done 60 odd, so they weren't part of our plan or anything like that. And then it was down to the fact that we waited for daylight saving, and you know, so there's an extra hour's daylight there, and we planned when we'd start. Our first cache was 3:30 in the morning, so there was just a short amount of darkness, then full on light, so good night's sleep before. So yeah, the biggest thing was the planning that went into it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Some people that I've spoken to, when they've organised these runs, particularly when they work in teams, sort of had designated roles. Is that what you did? Did you have, someone who was a driver, someone was a navigator, someone who was finding, or did you rotate those roles during the day?
Yeah, a bit of rotation is the main thing, I think. Well, I've thought afterwards too, it certainly takes a whole team to do this sort of thing. So someone might be reading the hint out for the next cache as we drive along, and then someone navigating, and the driver is probably, you know, looking towards after that cache is done where the next one is. But it's a bit more of a bit of a sharing thing more than anything.
All right, tell us about the caches that you hit in Adelaide. I mean, listeners will know that when Web Guy and I did a run through Canberra, we found a lot of micros, and some of them were a little bit difficult to find. What was your experience in Adelaide?
Oh, well, generally, they were saying that there weren't only a couple of nanos throughout the day, which was quite good, but a few eclipse contained, probably quite a few out of 210 caches, but not as many. We'd been up to Brisbane previously, and every second cache up there seemed to be an eclipse container, but I think a lot of the ones now are, you get your little 200 milliliter Sistema containers is quite a few of them. But yeah, a bit of a large variety, I guess, throughout the day. So
210 was the record you set, and that equates to how often is that? One every 7 or 8 minutes?
7 or 8 minutes, about 8 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So did you set a time limit on how long you would search for a cache, and were there times when you aborted a search because it was taking too long?
Oh, definitely. We out of our 210, we also had like 34, 35 DNFs. So there's another 35 caches we visited. But if we didn't find it within, say, 2 to 5 minutes, we were gone. And we talked to the guys at the event after the thing, and we said, plenty of DNFs will roll in, but that doesn't say that your cache is not there. You know, we just didn't see it in the first 5 minutes. We were gone.
Now, one every 6 or 7 minutes, did either of you have time to enjoy any of the locations that you visited?
Glenelg and stuff like that. Down south we also enjoyed. There were some specific caches that we took time off. I think we visited one that had won some awards for the best SA cache, so we went, right, we'll spend a little bit more time here and stuff like that. And it was an old pump that we enjoyed doing that one. And, you know, there was plenty of variety.
And Steve, any locations that stood out for you?
Yeah, probably not particularly. I guess, yeah, to do a cache that often, we sort of didn't get to stop that long. I mean, for me too often, I'm sort of, you know, head down for the next one, so sometimes they're not paying as much attention. But yeah, I think you do see what's going on around the place. Saw plenty of parks is probably the norm for a lot of caches down there. But yeah, as Dave said, I think when you get around the sea, obviously, you know, there's some nice spots along there late in the afternoon, I remember, and I don't mind seeing a plane or two go over around near the airport, I remember that, and we got mooned at Port Adelaide at about, I don't know what time it was, early the next morning or something like that. So, yeah, I think there's things you remember throughout the day, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. One of the big things, I suppose, as you're getting towards the end of your 24-hour period is the fatigue factor. How did you ensure that, you know, I mean, basically none of you fell asleep in the search or at the wheel?
I was actually surprised myself anyway how I went. I thought I'd be a lot tighter, but one of the things, I mean, you're a bit drained by the end of it, but one of the things I thought, because you are so regularly finding caches, I think if you, it's like a lot of things, if you'd gone for so long and then sat down for half an hour, you'd probably fall asleep. But when you've, every few minutes, there's another cache, I think there's always something to do and sort of keep your mind ticking over. So myself, I didn't find it to be too bad, actually. I think some other times when we've gone, we've done some other runs, and I've probably been a bit tighter on those than this one, so...
All right, so tips for anyone who's looking to break your record of 210 or just looking to set a record of their own. What advice would you give, Dave?
Planning. It's all about the planning, right? And like I said, we started 6 months ago to bring this together. And you're just refining it each little bit. As Steve had said earlier, we had it, our original route was to take us anti-clockwise in a north first and then around the city that way. At the last minute, let's go south, and south probably proved to be the better way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to set a record, you've got to be prepared to walk away. Five pairs of eyes at 5 minutes a cache, that's still potentially 25 minutes. Most people wouldn't spend 25 minutes looking at a cache unless they really wanted it. You can't do that if you're out for a record.
Mm-hmm. And any other bits of additional advice, Steve?
Oh, not really. I think we've covered most of the things. The stickers, and I mean, yeah, I think with a lot of those things too, you got to realise when you're finding so many, yeah, if you do waste time on each cache, by the time you make even a minute each cache, it's a few hours gone when you're trying to do that many. So, yeah, pick an area that's high in concentration and low in traffic, and Adelaide seems to have some of those. So, I haven't got any other tips.
And very quickly, how long did it take you to log all those finds?
Oh, quite a while. A few days, but it eats away at you if you don't get it done. So.
And were they more than just a thanks for the cache?
Copy and paste got a good workout, but we keep notes as we go around. So we've got a brief note about what each one was. So there was the odd phone call. Do you remember this one? Do you remember that one? And then, but yeah, it took some of the guys had the field note capability, so theirs was a little bit easier. I'm probably a little bit behind the technology there, so it took me a full week to log all mine, plus the other ones that we found through the other days that we were there. So, yeah, it took quite a while.
All right, well, the sport is about the numbers. We like to say it isn't, but it is. So you've set one milestone through this record. What other milestones are you looking to achieve over the short term?
Short term, I don't know. There's no other cities, no other locations where we could probably beat that record, but just for this month, I think it works out we might get 5 milestones in 1 month. So that's a pretty good milestone to achieve, I think.
And for yourself?
Oh, I don't know. I think probably the next thing for me is 3,000, but I see recently the Kiwi set a record for one day. We should go over and take their record for most caches in a day. So, but no, we'll see how we go on that front.
All right, well, there's the gauntlet's been thrown down, so everyone across the ditch, you better watch out, because it sounds like there's a horde of Aussies that are coming over now to claim your record. Well, look, thanks very much for joining us on Geo Talk. Dave, all the best, and Steve, once again, thanks for joining us, and I hope to bump into you again on the geocaching trail.
Thank you.
time to go around the country and look at some of the events that are happening. Now, if you're listening as this comes out, you might be able to get out in time to these first few. There's Toowoomba's fourth pub lunch on the 12th of December over in Queensland. And also on the 12th of December is the Narragingi Christmas party being held by Geocaching New South Wales. That's out in Western Sydney. On Sunday the 13th is the SCCS on Sunday by the Northern Invaders in South Australia. And also on the 13th is the Pioneers Christmas Cache event being held in Northern Tasmania. On the 17th of December is the ICC Christmas Barbecue that's being held down in Wollongong. And on the 19th of December is the Top End Cache's Christmas event up in Darwin. And on the 27th of December, Intervening Days 2 being held out in Melton in Western Melbourne. Hopefully you'll be able to get out to some of those events, and if not, why not think of holding your own in the new year and letting us know at GeoTalk. Well, I know I cheekily say it's not about the numbers on the podcast. Of course, it really is. It just depends on what numbers you're looking at. And here's a few milestones that have been called in. First of all, let's check out Team Altair, who have reached a fairly significant milestone.
G'day. This is Altair. We've just done our 1,000th cache. It's combined GC and GCA. We don't differentiate. We're at a nasty piece of work called Tilsby's Revenge in Canberra. I don't know why she was taking revenge on us, but we didn't do anything to her, but it's a lovely cache. We've just found it. Took us about an hour and a half from the start. That's to find the cache. Took us a bit more longer than that to solve the puzzle, about a year or so. Try that. What do you think, Ali?
Yeah, it's a good cache. Lovely location. Enjoyed all the waypoints. They're all different. We didn't have any trouble at the waypoints. The longest took us about 5 minutes to locate. But it's just a really nice walk through the pine forest and up over a hill with nice views of Canberra.
Not much of a clue there because there's lots of hills in Canberra. Thanks, Tilby. Great cache. See yous.
G'day. Gary from Team Cacho. Just calling in with a milestone update and a caching tip after a weekend of caching in the Nelson's Bay Central Coast area. First of all, we would like to thank all the cache owners and fellow caches that we have got to know over the past year for your conversations and taking us to so many different and wonderful places. What a year it has been for Team Cacho, with 2009 being our first year of active caching. Our first cache ever found, unfortunately, has now been archived due to being damaged by muggles. This cache was left in the dark by the rats, and boy oh boy, did this start something, as we are now fast approaching our 1,000th find. And as to date, have placed 54 caches of our own. All going well, we are planning our 1,000th find to coincide with the first Christmas party to be held by the New South Wales Geocaching Association at Narragingi. Hope you can all come and help us celebrate this wonderful milestone. Now for a caching tip. When making swaps, don't place flammable items within a cache. We had to remove a box of matches from a cache this last weekend. This cache was located in a bush environment, but thankfully nothing had gone wrong. Once again, thanks to all our fellow caches. May your caching trips be safe and enjoyable. Hope to see you all at the Mega event in 2010. I know, we can't wait to be part of this wonderful occasion.
Well, thank you, Team Cacho, for ringing in that milestone and also that helpful tip. I know I've come across quite a few caches with some items that have been a bit questionable. In fact, I think there was one I actually found a stubby or a bottle of beer in it. It was shocking. It was well past its use-by date, but it shouldn't be there in the first place anyway. And also to Team Altair, congratulations on reaching a milestone. If you want to call in a milestone or a tip or just a cheerio, anything, in fact, give us a call on the GeoTalk hotline at 02-800-50-436. You can put it into your mobile phone. That way you don't have to remember the number. 02-800-50-436. And remember, everyone who calls in goes into the draw to win the gift voucher from the Geocache Store Australia, and we'll be announcing the winner for this particular episode at the very end. Now, one thing that was suggested to me earlier in the year was to let loose one of my GeoTalk GeoCoins, and anyone who found it, prompt them to call in their find and where they found it. And finally, after being out on the road for a couple of months and still stuck in the ACT, I got a call from Secret Squirrel letting me know how my GeoCoin is going.
It's Secret Squirrel BJC here from Canberra. Just wanted to let you know that I rescued your lovely GeoTalk coin today from an Imagi cache. It was a beautiful grassy valley in the middle of frickin' nowhere. I love caching because of the adventure that I have when I go out into the middle of nowhere bushwalking with my best mate, Captain Tomato. Thanks.
Well, thank you for that, Secret Squirrel, letting me know how my GeoCoin is going and where it's sitting. And also another one I should mention is the Long Way Round Travel Bug TB race, which has been happening now for a few months, and it will finish up on the Wagga Wagga Mega Event weekend in Easter this year. Now, there's been a number of travel bugs, I think 22 off the top of my head, that have been travelling from South Africa back to Wagga. And my travel bug, Mr. Grumpy, who's suitably, you know, been named in my honour, has finally made it out of Africa, and he's actually in Singapore now. And a big thank you to Capricorn 77 for releasing him in Singapore. He's still in the middle of the field. I think he's coming 10th at the moment. There's one travel bug, I think it's GD's travel bug, who's racked up something in the order of 35,000 kilometres already and is well ahead of the competition. It'd be very hard to catch up to that TB. But anyway, if you want to check that out, go to cachinggames.com, and they've also got another game running over the summer period. It's for moving or movable geocaches. So if you want to get into that, check that out as well. That's cachinggames.com. Well, there's two items in the GeoTalk mailbag. So let's first of all start off with Lionel, who's also known as ZAUKAU. He says, my wife and I are new to geocaching game and it recently attempted number 7, Isaac's Rest. And this one can be very tricky if you don't get lucky and spot the clue. So after an extensive search, which took some time as it's in a graveyard with lots of graves, my wife finally found the coordinates at waypoint 1 for waypoint 2. At that moment, somebody approached us, and we immediately assumed it was a fellow geocacher. So we called out, have you found it? Then he set about asking where a specific building was located in the graveyard. Turned out he was trying to find a relative. Not a cache. So based on his diagram of the gravesite, I was able to determine that the orientation of the graves differed from those of his relative, so I pointed them in the direction I thought the grave might be. After some time looking for the cache at waypoint 2, we gave up and tracked down the guy we had assisted. The building on his map had unfortunately been demolished, but he had found his relative, and that made up for us not finding the cache. Eventually we returned and found the cache, so if it had not been that we were caching there on the day and that he hadn't been there looking on the same day, then he may have still been searching for his long-lost family. Just goes to prove that timing is everything. Thanks for that, Lionel. Also in the mailbag, we got a letter from Justin Geofillens. Now, this is a question he wants to ask the listeners. He's relatively new to geocaching. He's heard a lot of people talking about clearing out their radius around their home coordinates. He wants to know, what is a good radius to work with? And he wants to know what is a good radius to work within so it doesn't seem too daunting. He has this idea that some geocaches can't deal with unfind caches in their local area and have to clear them as soon as possible. Is it just him, or does he think some of us are too obsessive? Perhaps he's too obsessive. Anyway, he wants to know what is the distance that you work with? Because obviously it depends on whether you're in the city or the country. Personally, I know I work off a 10K radius, but I know I have not cleared that out, not since I've moved to Sydney. And I think at the moment I'm probably down about 8 or 9, with one of them being a very tough one. But anyway, it's a question I want you guys to write in or call in and let me know. What sort of radius do you try to clear out, and how well do you do it at clearing it? Give us a call on the GeoTalk hotline, 02800 5436, or drop us an email, geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Just about all for this episode of Geo Talk. But before we head off into the sunset, first of all, got to announce the winner of the Geocaching Store Australia gift voucher, and that goes to Steba. Congratulations. Not only have you set a record in Australia, but you've also won a gift voucher for your efforts. Drop us an email with your address and we'll post that out to you ASAP. And also the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question. The question was, how many trig points are there in Australia in the Geocaching Australia website? And the answer is 5,270. So you've got no shortage of trig points to go searching for over the summer break. Well, that's it for this episode. The next one will be coming on the other side of the new year. So between now and then, I'd like to wish all our listeners a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll join you again in 2010. Until next time, safe geocaching.